content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page with the special section headline, Building the Triangle. Despite challenges, the Triangle's architects, builders, and developers are creating aspirational projects. And this special section begins with a editor's letter written by Becky Troyer, editor-in-chief. Commercial construction moves forward despite lingering market challenges. Nationwide, the commercial construction industry has been slammed since the onset of the pandemic. From early supply chain struggles to a shifting office market to crippling inflation and interest rates, developers and contractors have had to battle multiple market forces to keep their pipelines moving. Last week, we highlighted several Triangle projects that have seen extended timetables for completion, confirming that there are still challenges in projects moving from site plans to structures. Yet one of the bright spots for the Greater Triangle is that we continue to be a magnet for growth through corporate investments and expansion, along with in-migration of workers to support our hottest sectors and overall attractiveness of the region as a place businesses and individuals want to put down stakes. In 2023, private non-residential construction spending in the Tar Heel State totaled $18 billion, and state and local spending totaled $11 billion, according to data maintained by the Associated General Contractors of America. Among neighboring states, only Georgia saw more private residential construction in 2023 at $28 billion. Our Building the Triangle special report highlights the busiest pockets of commercial construction and development in our 16-country region. Kaylee Thompson reports on the hot zones, and I believe that should be 16-county region. Kaylee Thompson reports on the hot zones in the Triangle's core counties, while Ben Tobin highlights those in surrounding counties. Kate Tracy spoke with architects about the latest trends in commercial building design. Cameron Snipes looks at the contractor's perspective. We also have tallies on commercial permits and growth in the construction workforce from the Triangle to the coast. Developers and builders are clearly doing what they can to maintain our region's momentum. As one developer told me over coffee recently, in some cases we might just have to be patient a little longer. For those of you in the industry, be sure to stay in touch with our reporting team and let us know what's in the pipeline and whether you see opportunities in surprising areas. And our first article in this special section is written by Kate Tracy, Architectural Innovations, High Growth in the Triangle Fosters Creative Building Design. Architecture and design is thriving in the Triangle. That's according to Joshua Thomason, president of the Triangle's American Institute of Architects and an architect at KC Studio Architecture, who has seen AIA Triangle membership soar. We've recently passed over 1,000 active local members, which was a really big achievement for us, just in terms of membership growth and getting a really active community here, Thomason said. While the growth comes in an influx of new ideas and knowledge from across the country, as the Triangle has seen a surge in out-of-state firms opening offices here, as well as expansion of current firms. Hanbury, a firm based in Norfolk, Virginia, expanded to a larger office in downtown Raleigh this year and also landed far and away the largest project it's ever had in the $4.1 billion Novo Nordisk campus. Hanbury has gone from 7 employees 5 years ago to more than 50 employees this year. Raleigh's LS3P announced late last year it was doubling its office square footage downtown to accommodate its growth. Horde Copeland Macht has set up a new office in Research Triangle Park, as has Nebraska-based HDR, Florida-based EDSA, and Massachusetts-based Phase Zero Design, which recently merged with Colliers. Firms have made it clear that they don't want to miss out on designing the Triangle's changes and growth. It's really become a hotbed for architecture and architect firms moving to the area, Thomason said. AIA Triangle recently hosted a symposium on emerging tech where architects gathered to discuss AI, machine learning, and the impacts of tech on their profession. I think the technology and where it's going is a big interest for me, whether it's AI or some of these augmented reality, virtual reality spaces that we can put clients in the community in the space before it's built, and how they can imagine themselves interacting in these spaces and tell the story of the building, Thomason said. Another trend Thomason is seeing in triangle design is in live-work communities. Think Fenton, Raleigh Ironworks, and the Raleigh Exchange in North Hills. Those developments have entertainment, work, and life balance for people to be more in that area, stay in that area, he said. Triangle architects are not ignoring national design trends when it comes to incorporating more natural or natural finishes into buildings. There are really so many studies out there that talk about how well we do and how well we react to being close to nature, whether it's actual nature or manufactured to make us feel that way. I think that's something that we've seen a decent amount of, and I think we'll continue to see more of that design, Thomason said. Mass timber design, which is growing in popularity as a more sustainable building design, is something that could start to gain traction here. Kane Realty's mass timber office building, designed by Duda Payne Architects, is currently one of the only mass timber projects in planning in the Triangle. With growth comes the challenge of increased competition. As good as it is to have that growth, firms are still competing with these large corporations, and you have local firms now going up against these national and global firms, Thomason said. And our next article in this section is written by Kaylee Thompson. The hottest commercial construction zones, the Raleigh-Durham area. Commercial developers are looking for a few key factors when identifying where to build and invest. While commercial real estate development has slowed down in the Triangle, it hasn't stopped completely, especially in regards to projects that are smaller, multifamily-focused, or have already received financing. In Raleigh, 60 commercial building permits had been issued this year through the end of August, according to Wake County data. While that's down from the building boom in 2021 when it was 147, it signals that commercial real estate development isn't altogether dead. Commercial developers are looking for a few key factors when identifying sites to build on and areas to invest in, especially in the tighter market. DeWitt Carolina CEO Todd Said said the company looks at it if the market can support a project at a particular site. With that, developers also evaluate the infrastructure, interstates within close proximity, and current entitled use. DeWitt Carolinas is behind the Exchange Raleigh development in Midtown, where the first 12-story office tower, 1000 Social, recently opened. You need to be real careful about the opportunity and evaluate your risk, so we really study up front how we think this is going to develop out, how it will best fit on the piece of property and fit in with the community, Said said. That's really important along with zoning. As you study a site, you need to understand the existing infrastructure, or is the water and sewer there to support your current use? The cost to develop infrastructure and bring infrastructure to a site can provide a large impact on the ultimate cost of the project. The rezoning process for a commercial building can take a year or more, followed by a 6 to 9 month site plan approval process. Once the plans are approved and construction drawings are complete, developers can apply for building permits. The actual building permit process is the shortest part, taking 60 to 90 days most of the time. The difficulty of the site topography or what a company is looking to have rezoned and built can increase the timeline, and typically the bigger the site and project, the more controversial it can be, lengthening the process. Larger cities such as Raleigh and Durham are set up with more staff, so the permitting review is more streamlined, whereas smaller municipalities might take longer because of lack of staff and resources. Apartment and mixed-use projects are among the most common types of commercial development and some of the most successful as walkability increases in importance being built around the Triangle lately. With infill development, we're not going to grow outwardly as quickly as residential is, said Skip Hill, Senior Vice President and Raleigh Market Lead for Highwoods Properties. We're going to be more infill focused. Obviously, that has to do with the availability of land and the access and utilities. We've got a site downtown that is 0.7 acres, so it's a little bit different than having to buy 300 acres. Our limitation is demand. That demand has largely been seen in the need for more housing and convenient commercial offerings within walking distance. So while the demand for office and life sciences space has slowed down, multifamily, retail, and restaurant demand has picked up. The Warehouse District in downtown Raleigh has received much of that mixed-use development with projects like the $300 million RUS bus with Union, West, the Mave, and Kane Realty's West End. The bus transit hub portion of the RUS bus is halfway complete, while Union West will start construction in 2025, shortly after the transit hub delivers. Union West will be a 23-story tower with 385 apartments and 20,000 square feet of retail. The $110 million Mave is a 20-story tower with 297 apartments. 10,500 square feet of retail space, and an 8-level parking deck by developer Capital Square. It will open in early 2025 at the corner of Dawson and Lenore Streets in Raleigh. And Kane Realty's West End project at the former Clancy and Thays headquarters is already in its second phase with its 7-story Oldham and Worth mixed-use building. Oldham and Worth will have 252 apartments and 4,000 square feet of retail and is expected to open in 2026. In October 2023, Kane opened the platform with more than 430 apartments and 26,000 square feet of retail space across 7 stories. Homebody Yoga and Wellness is already signed on and will open in early 2025. Dix Park has started to see more commercial activity too, especially with the $700 million Weld project. SLI Capital and Mack Real Estate Group topped out the first 20-story tower in July, with the second following not far behind. There will eventually be a third 20-story tower. Altogether, the 3 buildings will have 1,200 residential units, more than 20,000 square feet of retail, and an 8-level parking deck. Kane Realty is finishing up the first building in its Rockway Raleigh, in mid-construction for the second building, and is designing the third. There will be 885 apartments and 25,000 square feet of retail and flex office space across the 3 buildings, with a focus on creating a destination near Dix Park with walkability. We envision the retail at Rockway to be food and beverage centric, with some services and creative office tenants mixed in. We have taken great care to design interesting storefronts and to create massive amounts of outdoor dining along both South Saunders Street and directly on the Rocky Branch Creek Greenway Trail, using raised patios, creating the opportunity for Rockway retail tenants to be a true destination on the Greenway. Josie Reeves, Director of Design with Kane Realty, previously told Triangle Business Journal. In Durham, 23 commercial building permits had been issued through June this year. The Novus in downtown Durham, topping out in January, has $13 million condos left to sell, and is getting ready to fully open. It features 27 stories with 188 apartments, 54 condos, 22,000 square feet of retail space, and is developed by Austin Lawrence Partners. Ram Realty is working on its Washington Street mixed-use project near the historic Durham Athletic Park. It will have 310 apartments and 7,791 square feet of retail space. The 2, 6, and 5-story buildings will wrap a retail plaza and a parking deck. Meanwhile, Research Triangle Park has started revolutionizing its space by creating a downtown and adding apartments, retail, outdoor amenity space, and other commercial offerings. The billion-dollar Hub RTP will have up to 1 million square feet of office, 1,200 residences, 75,000 square feet of retail, and a 250-room hotel. MAA has built MAA Nixie, which is open with 406 units and will build 3 more. Construction will start soon on the Renaissance Hotel by Marriott. There will be 4 office buildings, one of which is under construction. Another one will be built by Longfellow Real Estate Partners as an 8-story office and lab tower. The Horseshoe, with office retail and a central courtyard, is just about complete, with Chef Preeti Waas signing on as the first retail tenant. Her restaurant will be on the ground floor of the 5-story office building. Not to be left out, some of the smaller towns have gotten in on the commercial building permit activity. Apex and Cary have issued 23 and 22 commercial building permits, respectively, this year as of August. In 2021, those numbers were 26 and 33. Much of Apex's commercial development has been the massive $3 billion Viridia project. Site work started this year, with plans in 2025 to start building some of the multifamily with ground floor retail, followed by the 213,000 square feet of industrial space. Viridia will be on 1,200 acres along NC Highway 55 and will have 8,000 residential units, 3.5 million square feet of retail, hospitality, and civic space, 12 million square feet of commercial space that includes life sciences and industrial, and public open space and walking trails. In Cary, downtown has seen a huge increase in commercial activity, especially since the new downtown Cary Park opened in November 2023. Along Chatham Street, developers George Jordan and Jordan Gusenhover Gustenhoven are building the Meridian East Chatham mixed-use complex and the Jordan Meridian Carey. Meridian East Chatham will have 200 units with restaurant and retail space, while Meridian Carey will have 196 units, 60,000 square feet of office, 10,000 square feet of retail, and a parking deck. Downtown Carey, they have done a great job with that, Hill said. But with the road network, at some point in time, it will be a node for probably some bigger office buildings. The road system in there is fine, but it's not interstates and big roads. We're looking at the idea of doing that at some point in time, build office in downtown Carey, but I don't know if it'll be sooner than later. With the pause in development, some of these pursuits of sites have taken a little slower pace now. Downtown Carey is an example of something that will eventually get there. And we're going to go to the last article in this special section, written by Cameron Snipes. Industry sees mostly opportunity ahead. Reasons for optimism continue to spread among CRE construction players. A fresh outlook of the commercial construction industry over the next several months sees plenty of opportunity, but pockets of worry remain. Many mid-year prognosticators forecasted a slow growth mode for commercial construction across the U.S. due to higher interest rates, labor shortages, and continued weakness in commercial property values. And lagging industry indicators still show softness in the industry. For example, the latest American Institute of Architects Architectural Billings Index found that the majority of U.S. architectural firms continued to report declines in billings in September despite an interest rate cut. But with another rate cut since and a better-than-expected labor market, optimism in the industry is up. And that rosier outlook is also picking up across the triangle. The outlook from many industry professionals in the local area is go, 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 according to Peter Marino, co-chair of the Real Estate Development and Construction Law Groups at Smith Anderson, the largest law firm in the triangle. The general contractor community is optimistic for continued growth next year, he said. The commercial construction sector's employment level across the U.S. reached 8.3 million in July 2024, surpassing its previous peak of 7.7 million from 2006, according to the 2025 Engineering and Construction Industry Outlook from Deloitte. That report, released in early November, goes on to say that the industry employment level has been steadily increasing for more than a year now. That, too, is also happening on a more granular level. According to the Carolinas chapter of the Associated General Contractors, construction employment across North Carolina in August 2024 totaled 269,900, an increase of about 4% from August 2023, and an increase of 15% from February 2020. Overall, we are also seeing more general contractors coming into this area, Marino said. Competition is stiff, and national firms are competing with the local firms. Marino also pointed to the recent presidential election results and said that has stoked the flames even further in a pro-growth type of environment. General contractor laws. Marino also doesn't foresee any major changes with regard to laws or regulations that will affect the construction industry, and no lien law changes that would impact the way general contracting firms do business. He does caution, though, that some areas of construction won't be as robust, including multifamily due to oversupply in the area and other factors. It's also getting more and more difficult and expensive to get insurance for those multifamily projects, Marino said. It's changing continually. Dealing with those constant changes in types, amounts, and costs of insurance coverage is indirectly having an impact on the industry. He does see quite a few hot areas of construction in several industries across the triangle, including healthcare and biopharma. Sean Peppel, leader of DPR Construction's Triangle office, echoes that sentiment. We expect the technical construction market to remain strong in the triangle and are fortunate to have a diversified portfolio of life sciences, healthcare, and advanced tech projects in the pipeline, he said. But due to the robustness of those industries, Peppel has lingering reservations about the labor market keeping up with the pace. The availability of craft labor and trade partners, which have the capabilities to build the projects, are very constrained, he said, though he believes that the earlier people get involved in projects, the better his firm will be equipped to secure the human capital to complete jobs. We are seeing more projects which have design, build, or innovative delivery methods, Peppel said. This allows teams to engage earlier and drive to the outcomes needed for project owners. Overall, Peppel is bullish on the future of the industry. We expect to continue hiring and growing over the coming year while focusing on key clients who have long-term roots in the area and robust capital plans, he said. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the biz section, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by Dane Huffman. Holiday shopping for yourself. New survey shows more and more Americans are shopping for themselves. If you plan to shop for yourself this holiday season, you're not alone. In fact, a new survey by KPMG finds that half of consumers plan to shop for themselves this holiday season. The survey of 1,018 U.S. consumers expects a 21% rise in how much consumers spend on themselves. I think a lot of it is related to the deals that are available on the marketplace, said Steve Reeder, KPMG's office managing partner in Raleigh. I will hold off on purchases until there is Prime Day, Black Friday, Cyber Monday. People are holding off until they can make their dollars stretch further. While Gen Z is leading the trend here, Reeder said it's more than just the younger generation. I wouldn't exclude any generation from that, he said. Purchases in technology and clothing in particular are driving the spending, but it also reflects a general level of confidence from consumers. Part of the spending is retail, but travel is also on an uptick, Reeder said. Not only are people spending money on presents, but they are also increasing their travel plans as well. Meanwhile, spending online continues to increase, a dynamic in play for a decade now. The trend for online versus bricks and mortar is here to stay, Reeder said. Holiday Inn may live on along Hillsborough Street. A restoration and not a demolition of the round Holiday Inn that has been a part of the Raleigh skyline since 1969 appears to be in the works. The hotel is not taking reservations after February 28. The developers behind the project, Title Real Estate Partners of New York, won't comment, and the interim general manager, Ray Lakes, would only confirm that reservations will end in February. Title had planned to demolish the Holiday Inn for a swank new development anchored by a Kempton. But the market for major projects continues to be risky, and the bookings at the Holiday Inn have been strong, as Lakes confirmed. Popular bar to open at Smoky Hollow. The Crunkleton has finally announced its opening in Smoky Hollow. The new location will open in March and feature a full-service restaurant, cocktails, spirits, wine, and beer. Founded in Chapel Hill in 2008, the Crunkleton expanded to Charlotte in 2018. In addition to beverages in the menu, guests will enjoy hand-carved cocktail ice that's made 24 hours a day at the new bar. Judge dismisses lawsuit, but hurdles remain. A Wake County Superior Court judge has dismissed a lawsuit against St. Augustine's University by a group of alumni and other supporters. The Save SAU Coalition sued earlier this year, accusing the Board of Trustees of breaching its fiduciary duties and university bylaws, allowing the university to reach a point where its accreditation and future are in jeopardy. The university asked the case to be dismissed, which was granted November 12. St. Augustine's called the lawsuit baseless. But this is not the end of the troubles. The school had to put up its valuable real estate to secure funding from a Durham firm called Gothic Ventures. And finally, Falls Lake is the hottest home area in Raleigh. Home prices have doubled since the pandemic in a high-end area of Raleigh. The Falls Lake area in North Raleigh is the hottest housing market in the metro area, according to the Business Journal's inaugural Hottest Housing Markets ranking, which is based on third-quarter listing and sales data from Intercontinental Exchange. The 27614 zip code stretching from Creedmoor Road to US 1 north of Interstate 540 saw 159 new listings and 126 listings sold in the third quarter. The average sale price was $920,616, while the average list price was $985,407. The average days on the market for sold listings was 76. Sales prices in the zip code were up 104% from third quarter 2019, highlighting the tremendous boom the local housing market has seen. The ranking is intended to emphasize sales and pricing momentum in each zip code using a weighted formula that includes quarterly and year-over-year data. Only zip codes with complete data were included in the analysis. And now we turn to the top news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. Wolfspeed's next CEO could be an outsider, Greg Lowe made a dramatic pivot, but the stock has tanked recently. And this is written by Lauren Onasorge. The next CEO of Wolfspeed, like Greg Lowe, may be an outsider, and he or she has their work cut out for them as Wolfspeed works to find its footing in a disruptive market, all while finishing a factory in Chatham County. Management experts said they weren't surprised to see a CEO change in light of the stock freefall Wolfspeed has been experiencing. When Lowe was announced as CEO in 2017, the stock opened at $24.79. By November 19, a day after the board went public with Lowe's firing, the stock traded at $6.53. If your stock price is tanked by a big chunk, that's going to put pressure on a board to act, said Timothy Quigley, a professor at the University of Georgia Terry College of Business. Most boards, when they look at a situation where there's a six-month downturn in the stock price, they're willing to give the CEO slack, said Patrick Wright, a professor and associate dean for corporate relations at the University of South Carolina's Darla Moore School of Business. But when you begin to see that consistent decline over 2 years, at some point you've got a governance responsibility. Wright said the data show the next CEO will likely be an outsider coming in from outside of Wolfspeed. You probably won't see somebody come in from a $50 billion company, he said, predicting the outsider likely works at a firm Wolfspeed size. Lowe was an outsider, too. He went on to divest the company's LED segments in favor of a pure-play semiconductor business. At the time, Wolfspeed was just 15% of the company's revenue. The name change from Cree to Wolfspeed reflected the shift in direction. Thomas Werner, who is taking on the interim CEO role, has been on the Wolfspeed board since 2006 and chairman since 2023. And our next article, also written by Lauren Onasorge, lawsuit, Humacyte misled investors. Some shareholders filed lawsuit after Durham firm sees stock drop. A group of shareholders is accusing Humacyte of misleading investors about quality issues at its Durham facility and violating federal securities laws in the process. Humacyte is a high-stakes, pre-revenue biotechnology firm working to develop bioengineered blood vessels that could potentially save lives. The company, with technology spun out of Duke University, is led by Laura Nicholson, who is also named as a defendant in the lawsuit, along with other executives at the company headquartered in Durham. Humacyte declined to comment on the lawsuit, which was filed this week. In 2023, Humacyte filed for what's called a biologics license application with the Food and Drug Administration, which would allow surgeons to use its vessels in urgent trauma situations. In February of this year, the FDA granted the company what's called a priority review, which basically announces its intention to fast-track the application to within 6 months, as opposed to 10 months, which is standard. But in August, the company said the FDA would require additional time to complete its review. In a press release at the time, Humacyte stated that the FDA had conducted inspections of its manufacturing facilities and clinical sites and had, quote, actively engaged with us in multiple discussions regarding our BLA filing, unquote. The stock price fell more than 16% on that disclosure, the lawsuit says. The stock would tank again in October after the FDA released findings that revealed violations at Humacyte's Durham facility, including inadequate quality oversight, according to the lawsuit. There were other concerns about a lack of microbial testing at the facility and microbial quality assurance. Overall, the stock has dipped more than 37% over the past 6 months. The lawsuit claims Humacyte was making materially false and misleading statements tied to the situation. Specifically, Humacyte did not disclose its failure in Durham, quote, to comply with good manufacturing practices, including quality assurance and microbial testing, unquote. The lawsuit claims Humacyte failed to outline that the FDA's review of the BLA would be delayed while Humacyte fixed the issues. It also calls statements by executives misleading. In May, Nicholson said the FDA remains on track with our BLA review and commercial launch preparations, according to a transcript included in the lawsuit. Cary to get new hospital with major expansion. This is written by Zach Ezone. Duke Health is beginning the next steps of a major expansion in West Cary. Duke recently filed a development plan with the town for the next phase of construction of an 80-acre medical campus on Green Level West Road near Highway 540. Duke, in July 2016, began acquiring land to build out the campus. In 2022, it opened its first facilities at the site. The campus currently houses about 100,000 square feet of primary care, pediatric, urgent care, and some specialty services. Demand and patient numbers have exceeded projections. The next phase of the project, which Duke is beginning now, involves building out 111,000 square feet for a hospital. Duke hopes to have this next phase open by 2027. And finally, retail center hits market in Southern Pines for $8 million. This is written by Ben Tobin. For Will Walton, the combination of the growing popularity of Southern Pines and the rise of convenience retail makes the property he is selling a hot commodity. Walton, a partner with Berkeley Capital Advisors of Charlotte, is part of a team looking to sell Murray Hill Place, a collection of restaurants and shops, for just shy of $8.4 million. The retail center totals more than 11,400 square feet. Walton said Southern Pines feels like it's one of the hottest submarkets in the state at the moment. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to A Better World. Jones to lead Urban Ministries. DJ Jones is the new executive director replacing Peter Morris. Urban Ministries of Wake County, which has served the community since 1981, has named a new executive director. Danielle DJ Jones, who attended the Raleigh Boys and Girls Club as a youth, took over this month as the leader of Urban Ministries. Jones arrived with extensive nonprofit experience, including serving as CEO of the Boys and Girls Clubs of North Central North Carolina. Jones succeeds Peter Morris, who led Urban Ministries since 2012. The nonprofit supports those in need with food, housing, and medical care. I am honored to join Urban Ministries of Wake County and work alongside such a dedicated team, Jones said. I am eager to build upon the incredible work this organization has already done and to further expand our services to meet the evolving needs of the community. Jones majored in accounting at UNC Greensboro and later earned an MBA from Strayer University. According to its 2024 report, Urban Ministries helped 88 women sign leases, continued to serve hungry families through its hunger and nutrition program, and provided basic health care through its open door clinic. The women signing leases came out of the Helen Center for Women, which helps women transition from a life on the streets to a home. The shelter aided 356 women for an average of 51 days. Lucy Daniel Center gets a big gift from CQ Foundation. The CQ Foundation, or SECU, has awarded a $750,000 challenge grant to Lucy Daniel Center for the construction of a youth mental health facility and resource center at its campus headquarters in Cary. The new wing will allow the nonprofit to triple its current patient capacity for therapeutic services and support. Established 35 years ago, LDC is the Triangle's largest agency provider of social, emotional, and mental health services for children from birth through 11 years and their families. LDC also received a mission development grant from CQ Foundation in 2023 to help with fundraising strategies. CQ Foundation is thrilled to increase its support for Lucy Daniel Center with a grant for their new children's facility in Wake County, said Chris Ayers, the board chair of the CQ Foundation. The need for their services has been growing at an overwhelming rate the past several years, and we hope our funding will lead the way in inspiring others to join these efforts in making mental health services accessible to even more families. We should mention CQ stands for the State Employees Credit Union. NCFC Youth has successful fundraiser. North Carolina FC Youth, which serves nearly 17,000 local players annually, had a whopping success when it held a fundraiser October 23 at the Angus Barn. The event, supported by Town Bank, celebrates the 50th anniversary of the group, formerly known as the Capital Area Soccer League. The event raised $250,000 for NCFC Youth's financial aid fund. Gary Beauty, the CEO of NCFC Youth, said the funds will not only open doors for young athletes to experience the game of soccer and all the lasting benefits that come with participation, but will also strengthen the fabric of our community. Retired school teacher gets support. A retired school teacher who was living without air conditioning has gotten a lift from Air Experts' partnership with Lennox's Feel the Love program. Christine Williams, who volunteers and now works as a substitute teacher at Mary E. Phillips High School in downtown Raleigh, had an HVAC system installed for free on October 7. And finally, scouting event raises $2 million. An appearance by Richard and Kyle Petty at the Friends of Scouting event in Raleigh October 1 was a big success. The event at the Lenovo Center raised more than $2 million for the Boy Scouts of America. Frank Holding Jr., CEO of First Citizens, was honored at the event, which supports the local Okinichi Council. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the reporter pages, beginning with Lauren Onosorge's page on the aviation industry. CEO finds Bermuda flight the right fit, nonstop to Bermuda coming to RDU, and the CEO has big plans. Convenience, business opportunities, and beaches, that's how Bermuda Air CEO Adam Scott describes the opportunity with a new nonstop flight plan for Raleigh-Durham International Airport starting in April. Scott said when the airline, which currently flies to seven destinations, launched its first flights to the U.S. last year, RDU was one of the first airports that proactively reached out to us. North Carolina is the closest point for us, he said about Bermuda, which is about a two-hour flight from RDU. RDU stayed on the short list, a group of market possibilities with existing point-to-point traffic, both leisure and business, where travelers were currently having to connect through another airport to get to Bermuda. And Bermuda appeared to be on RDU's short list, too, as Scott said the airport was in frequent contact about ways to make the flight work for both parties. Cross-promotion is part of the arrangement, Scott said. What really sold Scott on the route is the bilateral opportunity. In addition to North Carolina tourists coming to the island for its beaches, he said demand exists from the Bermuda business community, people with island fever looking to get back to the East Coast to shop and connect with friends and family. It's a really important part of the overall puzzle, he said of the route. It's not just about providing service in one direction. It's really mutually beneficial. Scott founded Odyssey Airlines in London in 2010, trying to facilitate business class travel between New York and London City Airport. But it was the idea, though, for Bermuda Air, the boutique airline startup he founded in Hamilton, Bermuda, that would take off. What sets us apart is we have the right-sized aircraft, Scott said, pointing to the Embraer 175s it currently flies and the Embraer 190s in the imminent plan. Right now, the Raleigh flight is planned as a twice-weekly service. But over time, we'll be able to grow that, he said. But we're also very much committed to year-round activity. RDU seeks chief strategist, dangles $250,000 salary. As it moves forward on its new international runway, Raleigh-Durham International Airport is making a C-suite addition, hiring its first-ever standalone chief strategy officer. But while this particular title is new, the role itself isn't, according to an RDU spokesman. Spokesperson Chuck McFall is the airport's executive vice president and chief information strategy and administration officer, and RDU confirms he's retiring next summer. McFall has been at RDU for more than a decade, initially hired as chief information officer in 2013 after a career at the Tennessee Valley Authority. RDU changed the title for his successor based on market research. The position, according to a job posting, comes with a highly competitive compensation package with an anticipated starting salary of $250,000 or more, commensurate with their experience and educational background. The Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority envisions a CSO who would oversee multiple areas such as finance, risk management, the project management officer, communications, governmental affairs, marketing, and guest experience. And finally, Breeze plots RDU expansion, but no crew. Breeze Airways is adding new crew bases to its network, but Raleigh-Durham International Airport is not on the list, despite the airline's aggressive expansion locally. Meanwhile, another budget carrier, Avalo Airlines, continues to host a crew base at RDU, where, like Breeze, it launched its first flights in 2023. Breeze Airways, classified as an ultra-low-cost carrier, is expanding some of its RDU routes. That includes service to Tampa, Florida, which will grow from two flights a week to seven, and the airline's nonstop between RDU and Burlington, Vermont, will expand from twice weekly to 3 days a week. Both expansions start next June. The airline's new nonstop flight to Sarasota, Florida, out of RDU, is scheduled to take off November 22nd, and it still plans to add a nonstop to Daytona Beach in Florida in 2025. But a crew base, which would bring more jobs to RDU, doesn't seem to be in the immediate plan for Breeze, which debuted at RDU in February 2023. Brett Snyder of Cranky Flyer said Breeze is an exception in an industry currently slow on growth. Breeze has yet to make money, and it is trying hard to find something that works, he said. Maybe RDU is an option, but Florida is historically more reliable for leisure traffic. And now we turn to Kate Tracy's page, Retail and Restaurants. Former Auto Shop to be revived as a restaurant. East Chatham Street location dates to 1950s and will retain classic feel. Some of the leading developers behind the rise of downtown Cary are planning their next project. This time they're eyeing a busy corner along the vibrant town's main thoroughfare. Developers Jordan Gussenhoven and Bill Zahn are planning to repurpose Gherkin's Downtown Auto Repairs at 107 East Chatham Street, across Academy Street from the Fidelity Bank, into a new restaurant according to town documents. The town approved the development plans on November 8. When this property at the corner of Chatham and Academy Streets became available, we couldn't pass up the opportunity, Zahn said. We're thrilled to open a restaurant on this vibrant corner and contribute to the walkable fabric of downtown Cary, which is making it a true destination in the Triangle. Craig Spitzer, founder and CEO of Early Bird Night Owl, will also be involved in managing operations at the restaurant. He declined to comment on the project. And we'll stop there. The rest of the article just refers to some of the things that the same group has opened in the past. Restaurant eyes opening date at the Exchange Raleigh. A new restaurant from a pair of local hospitality entrepreneurs has made progress on its efforts to open at a billion-dollar development in Raleigh. Peregrine, a collaboration between Vidrio chef Saif Rahman and Watson Ward's Patrick Shanahan, is pacing to open in the Exchange Raleigh in February. Located on the ground floor of the 1000 Social Tower, the 4,000 square foot restaurant will feature global flavors from Rahman's home in Bangladesh to New York to North Carolina. And we'll stop there, as the rest of the article briefly mentions how Rahman and Shanahan came to do business together. Final article, Italian restaurant joins growing lineup. Smoky Hollow in downtown Raleigh has landed a new restaurant tenant. La Cucina Italiana, an Italian restaurant in Clayton, is expanding to a new location at Kane Realty's development at 421 North Harrington Street. The restaurant plans to open early next year and will be located next to another restaurant, Madre. In Clayton, La Cucina's menu features a number of gourmet pizzas in a variety of sizes. The restaurant also serves calzones, stromboli, pasta, and sandwiches. Pasta dishes range from $11.99 to $16.49 on the restaurant's website. A build-your-own calzone costs $12.99. And we'll stop there, as the rest of the article just points out what's already existing in Smoky Hollow. And now we turn to Kaylee Thompson's page on real estate and development. Cary office building flagged for residential. Highwoods looks to take property near Lake Crabtree in new direction. A commercial real estate firm in Raleigh is looking to convert another office building to residential use. Highwoods Properties has applied for an amendment to the current zoning for an office building along Weston Parkway near Lake Crabtree in Cary. The zoning is Planned Development District Major, but Highwoods wants to amend the office and industrial tract for its three-story office building to allow for multifamily, townhome, and commercial uses. The building is about 30 years old, and it probably would be better utilized long-term for the whole area if it is converted to residential in some form. And so we're looking at the idea of rezoning that site to have residential usage instead of or in addition to the office in those areas, said Skip Hill, Senior Vice President and Raleigh Market Lead for Highwoods. The rezoning application shows that the development would replace the office building with either a multifamily project or townhomes that can be up to four stories. The buildings would front Weston Parkway, and sidewalks would be constructed to increase the walkability of the area. The proposed rezoning enables the redevelopment of the site to replace an aging, underutilized office building with residential uses, the application says. And we'll stop here with that. This article, as it just covers a few of the possibilities of what could happen. Build-to-rent townhomes on the rise in Wendell. A community with more than 200 build-to-rent homes is coming to Wendell. Investment firm PCCP of New York and developer Advenir Azora of Miami are behind the new community south of Highway 64 near the Gooch Sports Arena. called Leo at Wendell, the community will have 206 cottage-style units with several amenities. Leo at Wendell will offer multiple housing types to target a variety of demographics. There will be one- and two-bedroom duplexes, two- and three-bedroom townhomes, and two-bedroom cottages. Construction has already started, with the first units to deliver in December 2025. Leo at Wendell will be on 19.8 acres at 813 Eagle Rock Road. It's part of a larger project that will have 375 units total and 1.28 acres of future commercial space. Build-to-rent activity has been steady in the Triangle as home prices remain high and people who can't afford to buy look to rent instead. Some of the activity announced in the past year includes 259 townhomes in South Raleigh, 217 cottages, duplexes, and single-family units in Wake Forest, 302 single-family homes and townhomes in Knightdale, and 30 townhomes in South Durham. And finally, ITB Raleigh townhomes to be priced below $500,000. Townhomes priced from the $400,000s of dollars are planned near the NC State University campus. AJ Stilitano and A Squared LLC has filed new site plans for 51 townhomes near the intersection of Kent Road and Western Boulevard. The townhomes will have three bedrooms and be listed in the mid-$400,000s of dollars. It's such a convenient location, Stilitano said. With the proximity to Western Boulevard and it being a major thoroughfare and ease of access to the Beltline, being just inside the Beltline there and less than half a mile away, that's the appeal with it. Stilitano said he is hoping to start site work in fall 2025 and that it'll take about 2 years to complete the townhomes. The estimated development cost for the project is about $2.5 million. The townhomes will be in 11 three-story buildings and range from 2,000 to 2,200 square feet. And now we turn to Ben Tobin's page on the Greater Triangle. Historic hotel sold in foreclosure auction. Hotel had been tied to Durham developer Anthony Dilwig. A century-old hotel in the heart of Southern Pines has been traded for millions of dollars in a foreclosure auction tied to one of the Triangle's most well-known real estate investors. The Jefferson Inn at 150 West New Hampshire Avenue was auctioned off November 12, with Home Trust Bank of Asheville being the high bidder at $3.3 million. There's a 10-day upset bid period. And we'll go ahead and stop there as the rest of the article discusses the past owners of the property. Developer plans 100-home community in Irwin. Irwin is set to get bigger as a coastal developer bullish on Harnett County plans a new neighborhood there. BRG Development, a group tied to real estate and construction group Brawley of Wilmington, is planning a neighborhood with 101 single-family homes in Irwin, according to an agenda for a recent Irwin Board of Commissioners meeting. The neighborhood, called Village at Old Station, will be on roughly 90 acres near the intersection of Old Stage and Avery Roads. And we'll go ahead and stop there as the rest of the article just mentions that they're looking for builders and the homes could possibly be in the $300,000 to $400,000 ranges. Manufacturer to lay off 97 at plant in Greenville. A global forklift manufacturer will implement layoffs at its plant in eastern North Carolina. Hyster-Yale Materials Handling of Cleveland will lay off 97 at its Greenville facility starting in January, according to a Worker Adjustment and Retraining Notification, or WARN, submitted to the North Carolina Department of Commerce. Impacted jobs include welders, assemblers, machine operators, and others. The facility is at 5200 Martin Luther King Jr. Highway. Employee separations will occur in phases, Brian Jennings, vice president and associate general counsel, wrote in the WARN filing. The first layoffs will start in the second half of January. The company is reducing the number of shifts at the plant from 2 to 1. A company spokeswoman said that, to further reduce lead times, lower total costs for the customer, optimize our manufacturing footprint, maintain the highest level of quality, and better position Hyster-Yale for future growth, the company has decided to implement changes within the Americas Division manufacturing operations, including some adjustments within the Greenville plant. Hyster employs more than 1,000 workers in Greenville and had more than $4 billion in revenue in 2023. And our last reporter page is written by David Pertell on the coast. Billion-dollar expansion on tap at Wilmington Airport. Pharma logistics firm's new facility boosts NC's global status for trade. Frontier Scientific Solutions, which offers temperature-controlled storage and transportation, is developing a new facility at Wilmington International Airport, part of expansion plans that include a new facility in Ireland. The development of the two facilities, which will be designated as free trade zones, supports the Wilmington Company's vision of creating streamlined shipping lanes for pharmaceutical and biopharmaceutical products, which are often time-sensitive and require temperature-controlled conditions. The facilities in Wilmington and Shannon Airport in County Clare, Ireland, will be linked by a direct lane focused exclusively on life sciences materials, with fly operations beginning early next year, according to an announcement from the company. The projects are supported by a $1.5 billion commitment from GID, a U.S.-based real estate investor and developer. At the Wilmington Airport, the initial phase includes a $500 million investment for a 500,000-square-foot facility that will be staffed by about 150 employees. When the multi-phase project is fully built out, the investment could be closer to $750 million with more than 500 employees. We're thrilled to announce this transformative partnership with the airports at Wilmington and Shannon, enabled by GID's investment, Steve Ubele, CEO of Frontier Scientific Solutions, said in a statement. Our initiative disrupts the life science supply chain market, promoting zero product losses, increasing sustainability, and directly saving lives, and it marks the first step in Frontier's goal to become the market-leading solutions provider. New film studio looks to attract Hollywood stars. Cavernous. That's how some describe Stage 3 at Dark Horse Stages in Wilmington, a purpose-built film production space waiting for a Hollywood director's call for lights, camera, action. Stage 3 is a vast space with sweeping concrete floors, black-lined walls, and not much else save a pair of director's chairs with the Dark Horse logo. But the space could transform into a Western saloon, a quaint village, a graveyard, a spaceship soaring across the galaxy, only limited by imagination and a production budget. Movie history will be made right here, said Kirk Engelbright, president and CEO of Dark Horse. You can't even imagine the movies that will be filmed right where we're sitting. Engelbright estimates $28 million has been sunk into the studio complex. He teamed up with his business partner and father-in-law, Rodney Long, the CEO of Long Beverage and also with Southern Bank. Now, Dark Horse will compete with regions such as Georgia, which boasts 4 million square feet of stage space. But Engelbright said, I've already proven them wrong. And along with that article, there's a big number, $179 million. Annual economic impact of the film industry in North Carolina, according to state data. And finally, shuttered plant hits market in eastern North Carolina. German plastics parts manufacturer Worthwine is looking to sell its more than 100,000-square-foot building in the Craven County Industrial Park off Industrial Drive in New Bern for $7.95 million, according to Chuck Tyson, a local realtor who is representing the seller. Tyson is also the mayor of the town of Trent Woods in Craven County. This move comes after Worthwine filed a worker adjustment and retraining notification notice with the North Carolina Department of Commerce in March, saying it would be laying off at least half its workforce of 120 at the New Bern facility. Founded in 1949, Worthwine has more than 22 companies spread across Europe, Asia, and the United States, employing more than 3,000 people globally. Tyson told Triangle Business Journal that the company is consolidating to another facility it has in South Carolina. The company's former New Bern plant is one of the only 100,000-square-foot freestanding buildings available in the area, Tyson said. It's got a lot of nice features to it, such as 36-foot-high ceilings. It's on 17 acres, so there is room for expansion. And it's located very conveniently to the future Interstate 42. Jeff Wood, Economic Development Director for Craven County, said the building has been a good product to have in our industrial park and has brought eyes on Craven County. Well, and we'll finish with a story we missed in the A Better World section. Fundraising jumps by $10 million in North Carolina. Secretary of State's numbers detail how nonprofits are faring. The giving spirit is still alive and well in North Carolina. According to data released by the North Carolina Secretary of State's office, professional fundraisers raised $58.05 million between July 1, 2022 and June 30, 2023, the most recent data available. That's up from $47.58 million the previous year. Of this, $43.87 million went directly to charities in 2022 to 23, an increase from $38.9 million the year prior. However, the aggregate percentage of donations going to charities programs in 2022 to 23 dipped by about 5% from 2021 to 22. While we saw a slight downturn in the aggregate percentage of donations going directly to charities, I am pleased to report that the dollar amount of donations going to charities programs increased by nearly $5 million, Secretary of State Elaine Marshall said. As people continue to contend with the effects of global inflation, so many charities are doing vital work for people in need and struggling to meet the demand with donations. It is so important for all of us who can give generously but wisely to make sure our donations are doing the most good for those in the most need, she stated. The $58.05 million raised in 2022 to 23 represents a 33% increase from 5 years ago. The annual report showed a downturn in the numbers reported from national fundraising campaigns that included North Carolina donors. Multi-state campaigns using professional fundraisers took in a total of $1.1 billion, a decrease of $139.8 million from overall funds raised in 2021 to 22. In aggregate, 81.57% of each charitable dollar to these national fundraising campaigns went to charities after fundraising and administrative costs, compared to last year's aggregate of 85.12% that went to charities and national fundraising campaigns. The groups that raised the most money were varied, as was the percentage they kept from the donations. Among the leaders were the Network for Good, which raised $11.8 million and kept 99% of that, the U.S. Charitable Gift Trust, the Greensboro Area Chamber of Commerce, the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, NCIDEA, the Alamance County Economic Development Foundation. And we'll have to stop there due to time, but the article does go on to point out that the amounts going directly to the charities has increased since the pandemic. And we have run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. And if you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.